Brooklyn born Damian Lillard.
Now, what a second season for Damian Lillard.
Last year's Rookie of the Year, an All-Star this year. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it. And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years.
This is Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with George Buscarini on KOAL 750 AM.
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. It's a Monday edition of the show. We have a lot to get into in the world of basketball and baseball. Over the weekend, we had some excellent basketball games. Yesterday was just a great day for the league. As far as Toronto and Philly goes, we get to see Kawhi Leonard end that series. I'm really looking forward to the Toronto-Milwaukee series, which will begin on a Wednesday. Then we get Portland and Golden State. Dame Lillard doing his thing as the Blazers finally end the Nuggets. I've been thinking the Nuggets were done for a little while now. So finally something comes to fruition on that end. We get Portland, Golden State. We get Toronto and Milwaukee. Tuesday, Wednesday contests. And joining us right now to talk about that and more, we have Jameson Welsh, our Drive Time Sports NBA insider. Jameson, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it.
Always look forward to the conversations. And like I said, we have a lot to get into. We'll talk about the coaching changes and the coaching searches as well, because I know there's some news on that front today with the Cleveland Cavaliers as well. But let's start by talking about Sunday. You and I had a conversation off the cuff, and I think you hit it right on the head. It was old-school basketball. We had two games, one that did not get into the 100-point mark, one that barely got into the 100-point mark. C.J. McCollum was fantastic. He drops 37 points. Kawhi Leonard knocks down a game winner. He puts up 41. I mean, it was just a great day for NBA basketball.
Man, it was very, very good. Like, it was Game 7. Game 7 is supposed to be 120-117. That's not how it's supposed to go. Game 7 is supposed to be tight. You know, a lot of good defense, a lot of, bad shot percentages. It's common. I thought that both games would be close. We kind of figured this would take place. So it was good to see. It was good to see C.J. McCollum having his coming out party to the masses. You know, a lot of people who follow basketball, of course, know him. But for the casual fan, the fan that, tunes in every now and then, this was the first chance that he is done this on a big stage. So this is huge for him, his brand, and for the Portland Trail Blazers. First time in the conference finals in almost 20 years, like 19 years since 2000. So it's a huge concert for them and their fans. The unfortunate part is the Warriors. With or without KD, the Warriors are still heavily favored. We still got a pretty good series going on.
Yeah, and we'll start by talking about that. We don't know when KD is going to come back. In fact, we know he's not going to play Game 1. And with the momentum that Portland has built over the last couple of weeks, am I crazy for thinking that if KD's not playing in this series, we have one that could go 6 or 7? Because I think it could if KD's not playing in this series.
So here's the issue. The only issue with that is this. Portland's guards struggle when you put bigger guys on them that can actually defend without fouling. And Golden State has those kind of weapons. They have Clay, Iguodala, Draymond, Livingston, et cetera. So there's guys that they can put on those guards to kind of contain them a bit, make it a little bit more difficult. Plus, those guards have to guard bigger guys or even Steph Curry on the other end. So it's not going to be like last year's where you could hide Damian Lillard on a Torrey Craig. That's not going to happen. Or in the past years when you could hide Dame on someone that's not a big threat. This is going to be a little bit different. You're going to have to put – one of them is going to have to probably guard Steph. Other one's going to have to guard Clay. And the problem with guarding Steph is you have to run around a bunch of screens. So even if he has a bad night, you're spending so much energy just chasing him around and trying to keep track of him. And then with Clay is 6'8". So C.J. McCollum might be 6'3". It's a really bad advantage. And then, Clay gets on the block or post him up, is shooting over a cone at that point. So it's a very tough matchup for the Blazers. However, you did mention they are playing well right now, but I do favor the Warriors. It would not surprise me if it's a very short series. I have the Warriors in 5 going into it, with or without Kevin Durant.
I favor the Warriors as well, but I'll tell you a matchup that interests me most without KD. Here's the thing. Without Kevin Durant, I don't know. There's not a rim protector on this Warriors team that I trust. And Enes Kanter, and people in Utah are well aware of this, when Kanter gets moving offensively, he has the ability to get moving in that regard. And if Cantor can become effective down low, Jameson, without KD, it changes the complete format of the series in my mind. Not to mention you have Aminu, you have, you know, Mo Harkless. I'm not expecting a whole lot out of those guys, but I'm looking at Enes Kanter in this series. If he can get it moving offensively, it changes some things.
Can he stay on the court defensively? I know in the past two series it's been different matchups, different type of schemes, but if he can stay on the court, I'm with you. My biggest issue with him in the pick and roll, I don't know if he can stay on the court foul trouble-wise or just giving up point-wise for him to be effective enough offensively. Because if he is, then yeah, he's going to be a problem for the Warriors. But if he can't, then it gets dicey. You know, the Blazers may have to play more Zach Collins to kind of match up defensively for what the Warriors bring. So it's going to be a very interesting chess match, see what takes place. I'm kind of interested to see that matchup because if you have Kevon Looney or Draymond guarding him, that can be very interesting, but if he has to guard them on the other end and they're setting picks 25 feet away from the basket, that can be pretty tough.
Again, we're being joined right now by Jameson Welsh, our Drive Time Sports NBA insider, as we talk all things NBA. Let's move over to the Eastern Conference. Kawhi Leonard gives us some fireworks as the Raptors finish off the 76ers. To me, this was the matchup that we needed in the Eastern Conference. I know Philly has some fun storylines behind everything that they do on and off the court, but at the same time, for the best level of basketball, for the best display of the game, this is going to be a very entertaining series, Milwaukee and Toronto.
Yeah, I think we have a series where, one, we get Giannis versus Kawhi, who are the two best players out east by far. So we get that matchup. But also, we get two markets that, you know, haven't been to the finals. One's never been to the finals at all, and one hasn't been since the 70s. So it's a very good situation. We get new blood, in a sense, in the finals, new faces in the finals. So it's a very good situation for the league. I think Milwaukee's a better team. Well, actually, I know Milwaukee's a better team. They have home court, and they got their roster finally back with Brogdon coming back. So I favor the Milwaukee probably. I'm surprised that they're getting rid of them in five games. And the reason I say that is this, Jordan. Toronto is so inconsistent. As we saw yesterday, their role players were so afraid to shoot, and you just don't know what you're going to get from their role players. One game they play great, the next game they play awful. Can't have that versus Milwaukee. The way they've been steamrolling people from game one to game now, you can't have that. So, yeah, I expect Milwaukee to win this series and win it fairly easily, even with Kawhi playing as well as he is.
Is it monumental for Kawhi to stay put in Toronto for them to win this series? I mean, are the two kind of hinged on one another? Because I would find it very difficult that Kawhi would bolt from Toronto if this team goes to the NBA Finals. Now they're four games away. Do the two kind of hinge on one another?
That's a great question. Like, no one really knows. Like, that's the thing. No one really knows what he wants and what he wants to do. And I tell people all the time, these players are making decisions not based off basketball decisions solely. So there's other interests these guys have. Some guys want to go back home. Some guys want to be close to where their businesses are headquartered at. Some guys just want to live in a better city or a different city. It just varies. So we don't know. No one knows. Remember, Kawhi don't talk. So it's not like he's out in the media every day, man. That's not the case. We don't know what he really truly wants. And until we do, it's very hard to guess or speculate because he has no agent that's out. That's a big time agency that's leaking stuff. We just don't know. And, one would think that he likes being in Toronto and, you know, we have a really good situation there, but no one really knows it. So we know it's still going to be more guesswork.
Let's talk about coaches because there have been some coaching announcements over the last couple of weeks. We had Monty Williams sign on with Phoenix, and that, of course, sent a bad wave, a bad vibe through the Laker coaching search. Jameson, over the weekend, it kind of went under the radar. The Lakers have hired Frank Vogel as their new head coach. My initial reaction, I'm fine with a hire, and I say this because you go back to Indiana, I don't know that Vogel ever got enough credit for those Indiana teams with Paul George that really took the Miami Heat, a team with three Hall of Famers, to the brink. I'm fine with it. I know it's not sexy. He may not have been their first option, may not have been their second option, but all in all, I think the Lakers did okay here.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Frank Vogel is a very good coach. My thing is this. The whole circus around it has been issue. The situation where you're trying to go after three or four other different guys and you offer somebody a contract that's below market value, et cetera, has been my issue. I had no problem with the guy they hired. It's just the circus around it, the incompetence around it has been the big issue. Forcing Jason Kidd on the staff when he doesn't have a prior relationship with Jason Kidd has been weird. But no, Frank Vogt was a fine guy. He's cool. Like, that's not an issue. Like, that's not the problem. The problem is how the organization looks through the aftermath of it. That's the biggest issue. And they have a very important July ahead of them, which is coming up very soon. And I don't think any fan or anyone that likes Lakers has any confidence in them getting things done this July. When I mean things getting done, I'm meaning adding a key free agent or making a move to, you know, make the team better or make several moves to make the team better. I don't see that. I don't have enough confidence in them to make the right decision. And that might change. That could change. But as of right now, I don't see it. And until I do, I'm going to remain very skeptical.
I'll tell you my biggest problem with it. You forced Jason Kidd on the staff, and now you have a guy waiting in the whim who is a head coach. He's been a head coach in this league. The Lakers have such a preference of Jason Kidd, and LeBron likes Jason Kidd, that at the first instance, it seems like Frank Vogel could get axed because the Lakers already have a contingency plan in place. That's my biggest problem with it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And that's the problem. If you're all just hiring Jason Kidd, and the whole thing about him and his situation that happened almost 20 years ago with domestic abuse, if you're going to use that to not hire him as a head coach, well, that's the same reason you don't hire him as an assistant coach. Like, that, to me, that reasoning is very flawed and very bad if that's what you're going to use it as. So, to me, it's just a very confusing situation regarding everything. It's unfortunate because I think that Frank Vogel could actually coach. If you give him talent, he's proven. If you've given him NBA talent, he can make some stuff work. The situation in Orlando, he was there when they had the GM with the draft board behind him, and they're taking Instagram pictures. So you knew that wasn't going to work. But with that being said, when he's had NBA talent, when he's had an all-star or two, he's got to game sixes and game sevens of the conference finals of his respective conference. So I think he's a solid coach. I think they got a good coach by default. They kind of backed into him. That being said, the whole process has been very bizarre. And honestly, I don't really care who the coach is. Who's the player development guy? They have a lot of young players that got to get better. And until I see those guys taking steps like they need to, I'm more worried about that and their health more than who the coach is. Because Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, Lonzo Ball, and Brandon Ingram have a lot of potential in this league. But is this staff going to get them to it? Remains to be seen.
Jameson Welsh, last question before I let you go. John Beilein, this guy is now the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. This came out of nowhere. I didn't expect this morning. I like it, though. I like it an awful lot. In fact, he's in extremely elite company. We've talked about that already on the show today. When you take a look at guys that have multiple national championship appearances, it's a very low number. I like the hire for Cleveland. I really do.
Well, so here's the situation. I thought he was the best coach in college the last couple of years. All things considered, the kind of talent he has, the sets he runs, his team's always in games. They always usually do pretty well in the tournament. I thought he was going to be, you know, I thought he was the best coach. Just overall, I thought he was very, very solid. He didn't have any flaws about him. He runs NBA sets, so that even though they don't make the shot, the set they run is a pro-like set every time down, which is pretty impressive. And also, he interviewed for the Detroit Pistons job last year. To me, that was the first sign, like, hey, he might actually leave, even though it was kind of weird. He was there for a while. So with that being said, it's not surprising at all, in my opinion. I think it's more of a situation where a guy's probably taking his last job. He's a little up there in age. He has to take a five-year deal. He has five more years in the Michigan deal. So it's basically like, hey, I want to try the NBA out before it's my time. It's a good situation, so we'll see.
Jameson Welsh, again, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Man, your show once a week, ESPN 1100 in Vegas, 1340 in Vegas, and also in New Mexico and surrounding states, 1480 ESPN in Nebraska and surrounding states, and I'm probably forgetting, 720 out here in Vegas as well.
Of course, you can follow him on Twitter, @TheJameson. Jameson, it's always fun. We'll do it again next week. Thank you for the time.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
Absolutely. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll flip side stock Major League Baseball. Former big league pitcher Bill Lasky will join us when we return. It's a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we are live from the Auto Forum Studios on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.